Welcome to another edition of She Persisted here on the Progressive Voices Network. My name is Melissa Carter. I guess it is officially fall, even though in Atlanta, it's 90 degrees outside. At least this weekend was a very, very hot weekend. But it was a great weekend because we celebrated my son's fourth birthday over the weekend. Now, Mr. Carter does not turn four until, until October 1st. But we wanted to have his party at the Southeastern Railway Museum. If you don't live in Atlanta, or even if you do live in Atlanta, you may not know this existed because a lot of the people that came to the party said, I had no idea this was here. It's in Duluth, outside of Atlanta. It is basically a train yard. It is a place that collects trains. You can climb on the trains. They've got steam engines. They've got diesel engines. They've got all kinds of cars and tenders, but they also have like old buses. It's just a really interesting place because it's so big. And if your child or adult, because plenty of adults are into trains, if you are into trains, this is, and I'm not endorsing them. I paid for the party. I mean, so this is just telling you how it is. But it is my son's favorite place in the world. We wanted to have our birthday party there because my son is obsessed with trains. And I'm a planner, okay? So a lot of people make fun of me, but I was planning this party back in the spring. And when I talked with them, I said, well, his birthday is October 1st. The weekend before and after this weekend and next weekend, they are having this big like steam engine extravaganza event. So usually it's just a place where you can go and they have events throughout the year periodically, but it's like they had three events in a row, which is the two weekends around his birthday was this big steam engine extravaganza. And then last weekend was National Museum Day, which I don't keep up with and I should, because Saturday was National Museum Day, which means all museums were free of charge to get in. So when I showed up Saturday morning, and they had told me this and I forgot, but they were like, the lesser of the evils when it comes to crowds would be National Museum Day, because they weren't sure how many people would show up, where the steam things was going to be like this huge crowd, right? So when I showed up on Saturday morning, there was a line out the parking lot, and I thought, oh my God, you're like, is everybody going to be able to get in? But they were fantastic. So the way it works at this place, like I said, to describe it, it's just this big piece of land that is a train yard, and then there's some trains within a building, and then there's some trains under a shed, and then there's some trains out in the open. And they have rides that you can buy on big, big trains where the huge train goes forward, back down another track, back up, and then back to its original spot. So it doesn't like make a loop, but at least you're moving on this train. And then they have a mini train like you see at parks or zoos where goes all the way around, and you can take two loops for like $5. The train cars themselves, and I wish I knew how many they had. There's so many, but there's a couple that are dedicated to just birthday parties, and these are air-conditioned, power-driven cars that are closed to the general public during events, or I mean, just during the day. They keep these closed, and they are only rented out, rent only to get in, and we had one of those cars, and it fits. I mean, we were told it fits about 40 people. The many times Mr. Carter and I had been to this museum, I had not been in this train car because, again, it's called the party car and it's closed. They said 40 people would fit comfortably in this car. And then when we were planning it, because Katie, obviously, and I, his other mother, are going to be planning it, but her mother lives in town and is still active. And she's like, you know, what do the tables look like? What's going on in there? And I'm like, I really don't know, because I've never been in there. I said, but there was one event where Mr. Carter and I went for a daycare session when I wasn't working. And I said, and we were in one of those cars and it had a long table like you would see at a church or at any kind of place that has any kind of food or coffee events or whatever. Just big, long table with, and I said, if that's in there, there's plenty of table space. Anyway, I'll get to that in a second about the planning. But they rent out these two party cars, and they are air-conditioned, and they do have fridges in there. And yes, they have plenty of table space. There were like massive amounts of tables in there. 40 people easily fit in there, and it's just, it's a really cool place. And they have it decorated, so you don't decorate. You're in charge of decorating the table, and that's it. The walls have portraits of steam engines and train cars and things on the railroad, and it's really neat. Of course, we were going to have this at this train museum. We just call it the train museum. I was started planning this in the spring, and you prepay for 20 people, which means you're paying for their entry fee and a train ride. I paid for 20 people, and you're in charge. The people who have the party are in charge of the food and everything. All you're doing is renting the space. I told Katie, I was like, okay, 20 people is what I got. They said 40 can fit comfortably. So, you know, let's keep that in mind when we're making the guest list. And normally parties like this are for people with kids, you know, your friends with kids. I now understand as a parent that these birthday parties can get out of hand if you let them, just like a wedding can get out of hand if you let it with the guest list, if you feel obligated to invite everybody and their dog. And so I limited my guest list to just people who are close to me that have children Mr. Carter's age, and I did invite a couple adults only that see Mr. Carter all the time. Katie, I've always said, is, I mean, as out in the open as I am in media, my personal life, I'm not as social. You know, I tend to be more quiet in my personal life. So my group of friends is smaller than Katie's group of friends. Katie's the personally social one, and she has a lot of friends who, like us, waited till we were a little older to have children. So she had plenty. I knew she'd have a lot of friends who had kids that were going to come. And then she started adding people to the list of colleagues and people. Oh, well, this person will get their feelings hurt if I don't invite them. And, you know, and by the time we were done with this, there were over, I mean, it was between 50 and 60 people invited to this thing. And I started getting a little nervous because the planner in me, when things aren't going to plan, gets a little uncomfortable. And I try to talk myself through that part of me, but it's there. And I'm a stickler for a routine. I got nervous and it didn't start an argument or anything, but I did say, we got too many people coming, because Katie's philosophy was, not everybody's going to show. And not everybody will RSVP yes. Well, it ends up the majority of people RSVP'd yes. And the party was this past Saturday. And here in the South, college football is king. And so I had it Saturday morning. And I say I because I handled the planning of the facility. I purposely made sure it was in the morning so that people would come and not miss their afternoon college game. And everybody, like I said, everybody's like, oh yeah, we'll come. The only people that didn't come were people who were out of town. So the plan worked brilliantly, but we invited too many people. My thought was, well, the kids get priority in the train car, and then some of the parents are just gonna have to stand outside. Like, so anyway, I'm starting to get a little antsy. Katie's the one that says, don't worry, even though they RSVP'd yes, they won't show up. There's gonna be people that are not gonna show up. All right, moving forward to, we planned it. We didn't think anything else about it because it was so far in the future. And then here it comes, and Katie's in charge of everything except the cake, because Millie Pete, my mother, always homemade our cakes for our birthdays growing up. And I always thought that was neat because that's why I like to bake. The funny thing is the reason I cannot cook worth a shit. But baking, I enjoy, and I think it's because I consistently got to watch Mom bake cakes, because there were 5 people total in our family, and no, she didn't bake her own cake. So 4 people in the house, she was baking cakes for every year. So at least 4 times a year, I got to watch her make a cake and ice the cake and decorate the cake and do the piping and doing all that stuff. And I don't know. I guess and she was good at it. And so there wasn't a rushed or a stressed vibe when she was in the kitchen baking. And she also made all of our meals, by the way. She was like old school mom who still worked and did all that stuff. But I can't cook worth a damn. She tried, but it didn't take. My brother and sister can. I can't, but I can bake. So point being, because I was raised with that, I told Katie when Mr. Carter was born, I would like to make his birthday cakes. So I made his smash cake when he was one. I made his cake, you know, all throughout. And every year, it's always, should we, you know, what kind of cake should we buy? So her mother, and this is, I promise you, this is not a criticism. This is just showing you how people aren't used to me baking. So in the 9 years Katie and I were together, I never baked, I don't think. Katie's mom, who we call Mama Jo, she has never seen me bake. She's been at the parties and she's, you know, experienced my cakes. But I think now that Mr. Carter's getting older and more verbal about what he likes, I think Mama Jo was a little nervous about the cake. Leading up to the event, it was, shouldn't we buy a cake? Shouldn't we buy a train cake? Especially now that Katie and I are no longer together, even though Mama Jo and I see each other more than I see Katie, because Mama Jo's house is usually where Mr. Carter gets dropped off to, and picked up, more out of convenience than any kind of drama. But I see her more than I see Katie. And she just was like, okay, I just want to make sure everything's covered. And I said, I'm going to make the cake. It's going to be fine. And then Katie and her mom, of course, being involved, was going to handle everything else. Friday night, I was looking forward to it. And so Friday night, I had all the materials. I left work, came home, and was dedicating. I turned on my iTunes, dedicating my night to baking. Music in the kitchen. I was ready to go. I made cupcakes, and I did this in previous years too, because little kids, it's easier for them to eat cupcakes than it is for them to eat pieces of cake. Because yes, they know how to use utensils at 3 and 4 years old, but they just like cupcakes. It's easier. They like it, they get messy, but they like to lick that icing off first, and then they like cupcakes better. Now, let me just add in here quickly. You know, I said that that Mama Jo had not noticed me baking before. I enjoyed watching Millie Pete bake. I baked in high school. So I when I got to be a teenager, Mom allowed me to be in the kitchen and bake some. I don't remember making many cupcakes, but because I don't remember cupcakes being a big deal back then. But I know I baked some, but I baked cakes. So in high school, I baked a lot because Mom was there and I learned from her, having watched her all those years. Then when I got on my own, I really didn't put the effort in, because it's easier to do it in your mother's kitchen when all the equipment is there, when all the ingredients are already in the cabinet, when the, you know, pans and everything you need is already under the cabinet, and that's where my mom put them, and, you know, everything's already there. It's different when you're baking and you have to get all the supplies yourself, and then you realize it's not just about getting the ingredients, but it's also about getting the bakeware. So I didn't bake. But when Mr. Carter was born, like I said, I mentioned to Katie, I want to be the one to make his cakes. And so that's his first birthday is when I started baking again. It's one of those things where if you give yourself the opportunity to try new things, or things that you did when you were young that you hadn't done in a while, you might be surprised at how easy it is for you, or how you might discover hidden talent. And I say that because baking is easy for me, and I've challenged myself to improve upon it every year of Mr. Carter's life. And now we're on birthday number 4, and I'm trying to up my game from years past. When he was 1, I made a smash cake, and I was pleasantly surprised at how it turned out, because it was almost like, oh, it's a shame that this cake's going to get destroyed, because it turned out pretty well. And the decorating of it, my favorite part is not the baking of it, it's actually the decorating of it. It turned out okay. And then year 2, and I think I have all these on my Instagram, Melissa Carter ATL, year 2 was, I tried a glaze. And to make a glaze on a cake, you put gelatin in with the icing. And you can find recipes online easily. And YouTube videos, let me tell you, YouTube is fantastic. If you don't know how to do something and you're doing it for the first time, go to YouTube, search it. There's videos of everything in there. And so there's certain ways to make the glaze icing to make sure that gelatin does what it's supposed to do. And so the purpose of it is, when you put it on the cake, it's supposed to have a glaze and look like a mirror. It's like a mirror image. on the cake that has a really cool effect. My problem that year was you put icing on the cake. You always put like a little layer of icing on these cakes before you put other stuff on it, because that way you don't get crumbs in what you're trying to put on top of it. So there was traditional icing on it, but when I put the glaze on top of the cake, I didn't let it cool enough, and I started melting away the icing that was on it, and it didn't quite have the sheen I wanted, but it was one of those things where if you were standing far away from that cake, it looked great. If you got close to it, not so much. So that was his second birthday, and we had his second birthday at a park. I did that, and then I made cupcakes almost because I know kids love cupcakes, but also as a way to keep people away from the cake so that the cake looked more decorative than functional, if that makes sense. That has been my go-to since then, which is I have a little insurance on the cake because the cupcakes are what they're going to be grabbing. Okay, so last year, Mama Joe, he started being into trains last year. We didn't have a train-themed birthday, but I made a train cake, and Mama Joe had actually found a cake mold and actually gave it to me and said, if you will make his cake, you know, here's a cake mold of a train. It was a train with train cars in the mold, and we used it, and I made it, and it was cool, but the problem was it was kind of little mini cakes because there's the engine and then the train cars, and I guess there's 5 or 6 all in this big mold. And you couldn't ice them. At least I couldn't because they were so small. And they would lose their detail. So we just had, I was like sponge cakes for the kids. So this year, the way I upped my game or had planned to up my game was with fondant. I'd never used fondant before. And if you are unfamiliar with baking, if you see a cake, usually I tell you what, the best way to think about what fondant is, if you look at a cake store, a cake shop, if you think, what makes that look so different because the cake is so slick, it looks just like a big white brick and they've decorated it, that's fondant they've put on it. And fondant, I don't know how they make it. It's a sugary sheet, but you can make it from marshmallows too. So it's like it's just a sheet of sugar. But it's something that you can mold and you can, it's you know, not in icing form. It's like a harder material that you can play with and do fun things with, and it goes on top of the cake, and you can eat it. I mean, it's edible. But I knew this year, because I was going to make the cupcakes, that I could screw up the cake and still get away with it. Now, my problem is my oven. And tell me if I'm just ridiculous, but here, this is where the insecurity will come in, because I don't have a lot of experience. But when you go buy the cake mixes in the grocery store, for those of you who actually try to make a cake, and you get the cake, because I use the cake mix. I've done something from scratch before, but since I had Friday night after work, I did the cake mix. And I got the one, I hate the one that says super moist, okay? These cake mixes now have, super moist cake mix. I'd much rather have the traditional cake, because they put something in the mix to cause that super moist to stay moist. When I went to the grocery store, the only option I had was the super moist mixes. It's like everybody wants to do that. And I wish that, no, I want the ones that my mom had. Because the problem is, and this has happened to me several times, if you don't have the right cake pan and you don't have the right oven, then that super moist is going to bake unevenly. And it's not going to work. What happened with me on Friday night, the first thing, the cupcakes were perfect, because in my oven, obviously it can bake things that small evenly. Cupcakes were fine. I did the cupcakes first, knowing that there may be a challenge with the cake. Took the cupcakes out. They were fine. The cake, I had several cake pans, and I couldn't remember from the year before, 2 years before, which cake pan I used in order to make the super moist work, because I first learned about this with the whole glaze incident a few years ago. I took 2 small cake pans because I was going to make a cake about the size of a smash cake for the purpose of just decorating it like a train, and put it in the oven, used the super moist shit, and when it came out, it was perfect except for the very center. again, it could be the cake pan, it could be my oven, could be the mix, could be a combination of all. I don't know. Anybody else has had this issue. But here we go again, I thought, and I don't have the time to bake several cakes to make this work. So we're going to fucking make this work. I took it out hoping that the center would somehow work. And so basically what happens is the cake is, it ends up being a bundt cake that has a center that's empty. Because when I pulled the cakes out of the pan, the center just fell out. I mean, it's almost like they put pudding or something in the mix. I mean, that's what it looked like, pudding. But the mix is different because they're adding something. And there are eggs in this recipe, but the center just won't stay together. And again, could be my oven, could be the pan, but I followed instructions as was. And I just let the bottom fall out and said, fuck it. So, because I'm putting fondant on this thing. Nobody's going to cut into it. It's going to be fine. They're going to eat the cupcakes. I stacked these two cakes on top of each other. Like I said, the bottom fell out. I filled it with icing in the middle so that if indeed we needed that cake that they cut into it, there would be, you know, it would be something in the middle. And then it was time for the fondant. Now, what I did is I went on Amazon and I ordered the fondant kit. I spent like $40 on the fondant kit because this is my first time. I want everything I need. And it comes with the roller because you have to roll out the fondant. It's almost like when I was working with it, it's almost like clay. Like it's working with clay except it's edible clay. And it comes in a clump and you need a roller to roll it out. And then I had stamps. You know, I had gotten train stamps and I had gotten letter stamps so I could put his name on his cake. Before you do all that... And what else did it come with? It came with a little cutter. It came with all the materials you need to work with fondant. So I rolled it out, and it comes with this big mat. And the mat has guides on it on what size cake you have is what how you can roll the fondant out. Because what you're doing is you're rolling it out into a flat sheet, and then you're draping the sheet over the cake. So that's exactly what I did. I draped the sheet over the cake. And I was very excited that I had gotten that done, but the problem was that it looked like a ghost. Because if you drape a sheet over something, it gathers. So it was flat on the top of the cake, but it was like a ghost around the ring where it had clumped together, if you know what I'm saying. I thought, oh God, I can't do this. Now, at this point, it was midnight. Okay, so Friday night, I had mixed and baked all the cupcakes. I think I had already iced all the cupcakes at this point, put icing on it. The theme was trains. I used Thomas the Tank Engine theme. So I had mixed red for James engine icing. I had mixed green for Percy and blue for Thomas. So I'd mixed those icing colors. I'd put it on all the cupcakes, divided them evenly. I had gotten Thomas and Percy and James little rings to put as the cupcake toppers for the kids. They were done. They were put together. They were put in the refrigerator. It was midnight when my ghost cake was on the island of my kitchen. The old Melissa was tickling my ear saying, just throw it in the trash and forget about it. But the new Melissa was like, you know what? I'm going to go to bed. I'm not going to give up on this cake. I'm going to have fresh eyes and a fresh point of view in the morning, and we'll see if we can't fix this. So the cake's not decorated. All it's doing is it's a clump of fondant gathered around the sides, and I'm already frustrated with the cake because it's hollow, but I put it in the fridge, and I thought, because if I leave it out, it was starting to topple, okay? Because again, the cake was hollow, so it didn't have its support. It was starting to lean. Okay. It wasn't toppling, it was leaning, but the fondant obviously was keeping it kind of upright because the fondant is kind of tough. And so I just put it in the fridge. I said, you know what? Go to bed, Carter. And so that's what I did. And that's a big lesson right there is don't give up, go to bed. So I put it in the fridge, went to bed, got up early the next morning, came back in. I said, okay, we're going to do this. We're up, we've had rest, let's open this fridge, let's see what we can do with this. So, and then that's when I went to YouTube. I thought, why am I doing this without YouTube? So I went on YouTube and I looked to see how you put fondant on cake. And everybody has that issue when they put fondant on cake. They put it on the cake and it gathers around the sides because it's like a drape. It's like a drape. And what you do is you just have to pull out the fondant from the cake to straighten it out a little bit like a sheet, then take your hands and you smooth it along the sides so those drapes don't show up, and then you have all this at the bottom that you cut off. Again, if you want to try fondant, go to YouTube. There's plenty of videos to show you how to do it. Now, like I said, I'd already put it in the fridge, so I put a little water on it to soften it up a little bit, and I was able to still pull out the fondant and to shape it, and I was able to shape that cake. Okay, so I got the folds out, and I was so proud of myself. I got to be honest, I was proud of myself because I didn't throw this cake in the trash the night before, and I was able to fix it. However, it was still leaning, and I thought, well, I'm just going to cut the cake off. So I cut off the bottom cake. You remember how I said I had two cakes stacked on top of each other? I just cut that bottom cake off and cut it evenly and sat it on the plate, and I was able to have it level, and we had a smooth fondant on it. And I literally did a little jig in the kitchen thinking, I didn't give up. I got the sheet back out, the rolling pin, the whole thing. And I got the colored fondant that I'd purchased because that comes with the kit. The kit comes with white fondant and colored fondant already there, already made. And I stamped out his name. I stamped out some trains. And I was able to place them on the fondant. And the other thing I did is I had purchased a train track and a Thomas train that went around the cake. I was so excited that I had finished that up and I had done that... It was such an elation at the fact that I again didn't give up, and I'm actually made the cake, and it was going to be a success. And you can see the picture of the cake and what I'm talking about. Melissa Carter ATL is my Instagram account, and I posted pictures there, and I posted a video of the train that goes around the cake in action, and the cupcakes are there and everything. As for the party, I got to tell you, it was so much fun. We didn't have any problems. Like, Katie and I arrived within about 15 minutes of each other. Like I said, I got there and that huge line was there, but the train museum knew that that was happening. They had a representative outside the line, and every time she saw somebody walk up with a gift, she knew to pull them out of the line. So the guests didn't have to stand in line because their admissions were already paid for. They were able to go straight into the party car. Like I said, the air conditioning worked. We got the place decorated in time. Katie did a brilliant job with all the Thomas tablecloths and all the balloons. And she had, Mama Jo had made train-shaped sandwiches. And everybody did such a great job putting together the party. It was so much fun. Like, I walked away from that party thinking this really was a success, because people came and had no idea that this place existed. And they were able to come in without a problem. They got food. They were able to celebrate. Their kids were able to get some of their energy out. And the beautiful thing, like I said, we had overextended our people. Well, 30 people ended up being a part of the party. So somehow it worked out. I didn't even bother to go back and see who didn't come, because it happened. It's good. I don't care, because we didn't overextend ourselves and nobody had to be left out of the the train car. It was just a beautiful day. The weather was great. It was extremely hot. And the funny thing is, if you are in Atlanta and you want to have a party there, the party hours are like from 10:30 to 12:30, and then again 1:30 to 3:30. And I chose the early morning because it's not early morning, but I chose the 10:30 slot because of college football. I mean, that's the reason. It's like I said before, I know that if you have a party on a Saturday in the South during the fall, then you're going to have to compete with football. And it ends up, it was a sweltering day, so it was the right decision to make. So it was fantastic. The funniest part of the day, though, I mean, it was the fact that some people who were there for museum day, if somebody came in and out of the party car and didn't shut the door completely, people thought that it was okay to come in. So we fed a couple other people. Like we, there was a couple other people that walked in and they're like, hey, hey, everybody's like, hey, because, you know, at parties, you don't know who knows who. So you don't know if it's my friend or don't know if it's Katie's friend. But there was one time I looked around and I was like, neither one of us know these people. And they came and got food, and then they realized they were in the wrong place. So they went ahead and exited, but they got their food. So it was very funny how some people just kind of strolled in, but it was fine. It was good. And the most important thing is Mr. Carter had a good time. I don't know if Mr. Carter has any clue still of what his birthday is. I think he knows that that means people sing to him and he gets a cupcake and he gets to blow out a candle. I had never intended, if I was the only parent in the situation, more than likely I would not have had parties like this for him until he was old enough to remember them or old enough to be aware of what's going on. I was never the person who thought having a 1-year-old party and 2-year-old party and 3-year-old party made sense. But in our case, like I said, because Katie, most of her friends have kids that are our son's age, and he sees them a lot anyway, that it's just a natural thing for us to have big parties for him, because it's just, that's how many people we knew with kids. But his first birthday, we didn't do that. First birthday was very intimate. But like I said, Mr. Carter had a great time. He was just happy to be at the train museum. I don't know if he had any idea that this was a different day than any other, except the fact he got to go in this car and never gets to go into. But he seemed to have a great time. And he was, of course, not happy that we had to leave. And then he can look back on pictures maybe and decide that, hey, that was kind of cool what y'all did. Too bad I don't remember it. Women need to realize that if the Me Too movement is going to work, women have to champion other women. And let me repeat that. Women need to understand we have to have each other's backs. We just have to. Now, I know that there is issues this week, obviously, with our new Supreme Court justice. And of course, Bill Cosby is in the news this week. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just in the general everyday life, women need to understand that they are, you're responsible for the representation of our gender. And what I mean by that is I know that as a lesbian, that when there are people who are trying to figure out, and in the past, when they were trying to figure out either themselves or their family members or, you know, anything involving somebody in the gay community that in their world, and they were confused by it. Because I was in media, there was a lot of people that would come to me for answers. And I felt a huge responsibility reiterating to them that I don't represent every single lesbian. I don't represent every single gay person. I'm totally different than another individual. But when you are in the middle of a revolution, let's say, and there's somebody that's asking you a question about something, that I felt a huge responsibility to make sure that I represented everybody well and that I did my part and that I had the backs of my LGBT brothers and sisters. And the reason I say that is something happened at work the other day, and it's something that I mentioned at Dragon Con the other day, that when women come up and support an old school way of thinking, then it's, you're giving men almost the idea that, oh yeah, it's okay, because men, if women need to instruct men on how women are, and there's so many women who are still default to the guy. Women still default to whatever the guy wants to do. Women still default to men's mentality so easily because it's almost like they want to please them or they don't want to cause trouble. The example at work is, a guy was talking. Now, he's in his 60s, And he was talking about his wife. Now, at work, we have casual, it's a pretty casual environment to begin with. We try to be business casual. But on Fridays in particular, most people, because it's the South, and like I mentioned, college is king, we wear our college colors on Fridays and represent our teams. So it's not just the colors. We'll wear these obnoxious shirts that have, you know, I have my orange and white on. I'm one of the few orange and white people in my office, so I try to be as obnoxious as possible. Most people there are Georgia fans with their red and black. We've got South Carolina represented. We've got Georgia Tech represented. Got Kentucky represented. So on Fridays, we wear our colors, right? This gentleman mentioned that, and he was kind of fascinated, but he had gotten a text from his wife one Friday that said that she was sorry that he didn't have an ironed Georgia shirt to wear to work, that she was apologizing to him for the fact that she did not iron his shirts the night before so that he had something to wear to work that wasn't wrinkled. You can, you know, some people I think can dismiss the fact that they're in their 60s. However, you have to remember 60-year-olds are baby boomers. So, you know, 60-year-olds, when we were young, were old school. But I don't consider 60-year-olds old school anymore. Everybody in the room, including women, were like, oh, you got a good one there. You got a good one. Women were saying it. You got a good one there. You should keep her. You should keep her. You got a good one there. I didn't say anything because I always say stuff. So I'm like, I'm just the observer in this situation and realizing that, again, women, I don't know. Like, I just feel just the fact that she apologized to him for not having that done. It's one thing to do something for your partner. I don't know. Like, there's so many things in my mind because I'm sure there are people like, what is wrong with her doing that for him? First of all, let me say that he was not saying it in a way like she didn't do it. Good thing she apologized. He was fascinated because I don't think he realized the amount of thought that she put into it. So let me say on his behalf, for the, you know, number one, he wasn't saying it in any other way than, I can't believe I just got this text. Like, I can't believe she just said that to me. So he was surprised that she had said this to him. But then I realized, well, they're still in a household, though, where she's ironing his clothes. Now, my mother did that for my father. But my mother's going to be 90 next year. And they did come from old school where he worked and she ironed. And my mother worked, but she still ironed his clothes. And I'm not raising my son that way. I'm not raising my son to depend on a woman to make sure that he looks good. Okay. I'm not raising my son to have the mentality that just because he works and she may stay home with the kids, that she's responsible for him too, that going to work, going to a job is not so overwhelming that he can't iron his own shirts. And the fact that this is a couple in their 60s and they don't have little kids at home. I just am fascinated that I see this, and amongst people I work with, young men whose wives who are doing things for them. So this is something that is not ending. It's continuing to be taught to young girls to take care of their man, with the idea that the man's taking care of her because he's making money. I must confess that I do not share that philosophy, because I think that's the philosophy that's gotten us into the situation we're in today with the Me Too campaign. That we have conditioned men to believe that it's okay if they make money, then they're able to do whatever they want to do because they are, you know, if you serve them, then they're going to feel like they are being served, and thus the respect is not going to be there. I really think that respect of women is not there for a great deal of men because of just the dynamic of the lives that they live, that you cannot allow them not to have any responsibilities in the home and then expect them to have 100% respect for you. And I believe that. In my own relationship with Katie, when we were together, it permeates even gay relationships, I believe. it's traditionally a man-woman thing, but in my relationship with Katie, I left the Burt Show back in 2010, and that was the morning show that I was on the longest here in Atlanta. And I purposely left voluntarily because I was ready to do other things and ready to sleep in the mornings and ready to just live a different life. And Katie and I, I guess we let people know that we're trying to have a kid at that point, but it was, wasn't, the IVF was not working. So we were dedicating our time to that. And I guarantee that if Mr. Carter is my biological son, which we don't know because we both put eggs in, each of us had an embryo we donated to the cause. I guarantee that if he is my biological son, it had everything to do with the fact that I stopped working morning radio and that I gave my body a break and I was dedicated to resting and being healthy. But in that time of resting and being healthy, what I thought was going to be 6 months off turned into a year off. And that, again, was by choice, because we were trying for this. But I could tell in that last 6 months, the overage, because we had budgeted for me to be off for 6 months. And then when it took a little longer for me to go back to work and the financial strain that began, I definitely noticed a change in the way Katie felt about me and treated me. And I remember talking with one of my friend's parents about it. It came up in conversation, but she mentioned my friend's parent. She took time off when their kids were born. My friend was born. She took time off from work, and she said that she noticed that her husband treated her differently. There is, in this country, right or wrong, there is a idea that the person who makes money is more valuable than the person who doesn't make money. And I challenge and guarantee that when there are racial issues in this country, part of that racial discrimination, I guarantee, in the minds of people who have that discrimination, they are assigning monetary value as well to that community. I guarantee somebody who's racist thinks that if they're racist against blacks, they're also thinking that they're economically challenged for the most part more than whites. And if somebody is racist against Hispanics, well, I mean, look what they do and look what I do. I guarantee that's part of their mentality. I think that classism is more of a problem than racism. Absolutely. I think they're intertwined, but I think classism is at the base of it. Because I think anybody with money ends up being able to do more than somebody without money. And I think that that mentality bleeds into the home when somebody's making money in the home and somebody's not making money. Now, is it fair? No. Should there be somebody who has the ability, if they want to stay at home with their children? Absolutely, they should be able to do that and not feel bad about it. But even women discriminate against other women for that. And it goes back to what I said. Women have to support each other. All these fractions that, how we're fractured off, whether we're pro-choice or pro-life, whether we're, like all these things that we fight each other over, stay-at-home mom, working mom, all this stuff is it's divide and conquer. Ladies, you have to understand, if you've never studied military history, my father was a big fan of military history. If you've never studied military history, the greatest military conquerors were divide and conquer people. If you weaken the people, then you can conquer them. You weaken them first, and then you conquer them. That's what Greek soldiers, Roman soldiers did. Asian soldiers would go in and pillage a village before the person would come in. So they've weakened the village long before the conqueror comes in and destroys the village. And so I think with women, the reason we're having such a hard time when it comes to equal pay and when it comes to Me Too and comes to all this stuff is we're already weakened. Because we're not a collective. Now, when we are called to the battle, when we're called to the fight, like with the Women's March, we show up. And that was a magnificent showing of women arm in arm from different parts of the world, from different political backgrounds, to sit there and to march together to where they couldn't even march because the streets were so clogged. But we do that every so often. We don't do that every day. We don't do that every day. And there should be a sense of betrayal if you say something and keep another woman in a situation in which she is degraded. Now, am I saying that my colleague degraded his wife? No. Am I saying that's an oppressive, awful situation? Of course not. But I do think there's that subtle message that at least now I know in that household, you know, he comes to work and she's doing everything else. And I just don't subscribe to that because I work, you know, and I'm able to be to be the single mom on my side of the singleness, you know, because Katie's a single mom too, so we're doing it together. I'm able to sustain myself. I'm able to work. I'm able to raise my son. I'm able to financially support my son. And I'm able to bake him cakes and cupcakes and everything as needed before I do his party. Like, I'm able to do that stuff. And women are able to multitask. We are able to multitask far better than men are able to multitask. But somehow, in all of our multitasking, instead of taking care of ourselves, both physically and financially, we're dedicating that energy to taking care of somebody else's pocketbook, thinking that we will be taken care of if we take care of their pocketbook. And it's the same cycle that we get into, which is, you know, you want respect, but at the same time, you also want to be taken care of. And you cannot have both. You cannot have both. A child should be taken care of. A child is, a minor should be taken care of. And those with special needs and those who have ailments, all those categories, yes, they should be taken care of because they don't have the sustainability to take care of themselves. But a grown woman has the ability to take care of herself. And that is why everything is negotiable. You don't have to go work a 9-to-5 job, but I do think that women really need to understand that you better learn to take care of yourself financially as well as every other way, because you are going to end up in a situation of bitterness because you won't understand why the person who you have charged to take care of you all of a sudden doesn't have respect for you, or all of a sudden is not interested in you, or all of a sudden is all these things. That you are partially responsible for your life. Yes. That you are responsible for being with somebody that respects you to start with. And then you have to work on a relationship every day to make sure that the other one is taken care of, but that you're taken care of too. My mother, you know, like I said, she ironed my father's shirts and she did all this stuff. But my father also is not the guy that just went to work and that's all he did. You know, they split responsibilities within the home. So he was doing all kinds of stuff in the house too. It just happened, wasn't in the kitchen and it wasn't on the ironing board. But he did plenty for her as well. Now, he was a little distant with his children, I will say. He did think that rearing of the children was the woman's responsibility, at least in my case. But I will say that she's told me one time that their relationship with each other was, yes, it was based on taking care of each other. But she said, but if you're with somebody that is doing that and you're doing that for them, you're both getting taken care of. Now, my philosophy is a little different because I just think that's, they worked out, they were married for 51 years and they had a beautiful friendship. And I think that it is inspiring, but yet I think it's unique because they were both intelligent people who had been through a lot of shit with each other, and there was an appreciation of each other. So they were able to sustain that because they continued to work on it. They weren't dismissive of each other. There was constant communication. But I do think it's unique because I think that if you dedicate yourself to doing nothing but working for the other person, I just think that's, I think that it has to be, that you have to also take care of yourself. I do think there's a responsibility to you because I did see my mother in bitter situations. I did see my mother not be happy that she had to sacrifice her career for my father's career. I do think, you know, because my father's career forced him to move a lot of places. And so mom never was able to get roots and never to get those promotions and never was able to elevate herself in her career because she was having to pick up and move and pick up and move and pick up and move. So I did see bitterness in that. And I think for a lot of women, whether it's their careers or whether it's their marriage, you just don't want to be in a place where at the end of your life, you regret the things you didn't do for yourself. You know, I had a conversation with my boss the other day, and we were talking about children. And again, one of the reasons I work for him is because he's sensitive to people with families because he's got one. And he was saying that, you know, you have to remember that you are not just a parent, that you have to do things for yourself too. And he was not just talking to me. He was talking about him and his wife, saying, you know, they feel guilty when they go off and do things just the two of them without including their children. But he's like, but you can't forget that you're a couple. You can't forget that you're an individual. And I think for women, you can't, you're all these roles for everybody. You're the mother, you're the wife, you're the daughter for people who have to take care of their parents. And so every week we talk about doing something for yourself. And I just think finances has to be a part of that. Finances has to be a part of that mentality on sustaining yourself. And even if you're currently in a situation where, Melissa, I'm totally happy being at home and having my husband financially take care of me, then at least be aware of the accounts that you have. At least be aware of the investments that your husband has made. At least don't be so ignorant to what's going on in your house that even if you aren't generating the income, well, you at least be completely intelligent about all the investments that your family's money is making. And be a part of all the accounts that your husband has. At least do that. Because there's going to be plenty of situations where a woman is at the end of her life going to realize her husband didn't take care of her as much as she thought he took care of her. And I know this all came from that conversation at work about her ironing his shirts. But I just thought, the women who were in their 30s in the room that says, you got a good one there, you got a keeper. I don't know. I just my reaction to it was like, I don't agree. I mean, I don't want their marriage to break up, but I just don't agree that that's how you make a successful marriage as a woman and still feel fulfilled and still feel like you are important and 50% you are equal partner with somebody. The only time that works is if he is equally doing something for her that sacrificial. And then apologizing to her if he doesn't get it done.
Try and get up every morning, day after day, and work for a living. Let's see him try that. Then we'll see who's the real tough guy. The working man is the tough guy.
With me, Joe Wilson, a wealth management advisor with a big money management house.
Mo money, yo money, Joe money.
I get an opportunity to help people turn their money into memories.
We're happy to get the kind of money that jingles, but we'd rather get the kind that folds.
Not your grandpa's financial show. This is your money guy, Joe Wilson, on Progressive Voices Network.
Hello, my big money makers and piggy bank shakers. It's me, your money guy, Joe Wilson of the Joe Knows Money Show, reporting live on Progressive Voices Network, delivering you 3 minutes of money news you can use. Trending this week in money news, a new study suggests that when it comes to happiness, a bank balance may be more important than overall wealth. Having more money in their bank account makes people feel more financially secure, which leads to an increase in happiness. A lot of people are financially insecure and are looking to change that. That leads me to my next story. 4 ways to save money when you're living paycheck to paycheck. Tip number 1, shop smarter. As an example, if you have a cell phone plan with a major provider, cancel it and get a pay-as-you-go phone. You can reduce a monthly cell phone bill into one that costs just $40. Tip number 2, direct deposit your savings. Automatically funnel part of your paycheck into your savings account. If you never see the money, you won't ever miss it. Even if you only have $5 that you can spare out of each paycheck, that $5 is more than you saved before. Tip number 3, leverage money-saving apps. Apps like Acorn allow you to round up your purchases and transfer the remaining change to an account of your choice. Take advantage of your tax returns. Many people can't help but blowing their well-deserved tax refund on vacations, cars, electronics, and other big ticket items. But the better option, of course, is to stick that cash into a savings account. Now it's time for Joe's Money Trap of the Day. Avoid using credit cards to fund your lifestyle or to take care of emergencies. The personal finance website NerdWallet reports that the average American household carries more than $7,000 in credit card debt. At the same time, the average credit card interest rate hovers around 15%. Take those two numbers together, the average family will face more than $1,000 in pure credit card interest over the next year. Here's Joe's money grab of the day. Guarantee yourself a huge rate of return of 15% or more simply by paying off your credit card debt early. As an example, let's say you pay off $1,000 on a balance of a credit card with a 15% interest rate. The result of that extra payment is that you'll owe $150 less on that credit card bill over the coming year and subsequent years. And now it's time for Joe's 15 cents. Don't tell me what you value, show me your budget, and I'll tell you what you value. That is a quote by Vice President Joe Biden. In my 18 years as a financial planner, I have found that you will make room for what's important to you. So please make room in your spending for your emergency fund. It will make you happier by making you feel more secure. You are listening to the Joe Knows Money Show on Progressive Voices Network. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Joe Knows Money and on Twitter at Joe Knows Money.
Ever really think about what ideas can do? Well, then you realize the size of the thinker does not determine or even limit the size of the idea. Well, that's what my children's book is all about. It's called Whale of an Idea. And if you need a gift for a baby shower or a birthday, I would love for you to consider it. Whale of an Idea, available now online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Thank you so much for being a part of She Persisted. We would love to hear from you. Ask Melissa Carter, 1L, 2S's in Melissa, askmelissacarter@gmail.com. Also, you can find us on social media. You can go to Facebook. You can either go to my Facebook page, which is Melissa Carter ATL. You can also go to She Persisted Show, and you can find us there on Facebook. Melissa Carter ATL, also on Instagram, like I said, if you want to see the birthday cake. And also, She Persisted Show is on iTunes. We would love for you to download it there. It would be the easiest way for you to be able to get new episodes, old episodes. When you're searching for She Persisted, be sure and add show to the end, because obviously She Persisted, a very popular term. ShePersistedShow.com is the website. Pretty easy. I hope you have a fantastic rest of the day. And again, do something special for yourself. Pretend you're your own best friend. I had a conversation with a friend at lunch the other day who is more of a kind of a spiritual advisor. I don't mean religious spiritual. I just mean spiritual, which really there should be no difference, but there is at this time. And she talked about how even for her, it was a struggle sometimes to see herself in some of her patterns. She was talking about patterns in her life and how if you recognize the patterns in your life, you're able to not only predict kind of how you'll react to something, but also keep you from situations that will put you in a state where you're not happy with yourself. One of the things that I've admittedly talked about is in my professional life, there is pure confidence. In my personal life, there's not as much confidence. And, you know, and I think every human being has that issue. And I'm not even convinced that's not kind of part of life or the life's purpose is to kind of overcome some of those not necessarily the deficiencies, but just the fact of you feeling good about yourself. The point is for you to feel good about you, not for everybody else to tell you how you should feel about yourself, but for you to feel good about you. And it's not a cliche. It's the truth. That is the purpose of everything, is for you to be happy with you. And that's what I want you to try to do and spend some quality time by yourself, doing nothing but enjoying your own company. And if you're somebody who cannot do that, if you're somebody who hates being alone, then it may be a good practice for you, because you need to learn to be happy to be by yourself and to look forward to the time you spend alone, just like the time, you know, that you look forward to spend with somebody else. You are equal to the other people in your life. And I think that for all of us to realize that or teach the world that, then we could do that for ourselves. That for you to first look at yourself and realize, I am equal to everybody in my life. And once you figure that out, then everybody else will figure it out too. So do something for yourself. Make yourself smile. Be your own best friend. And reach out. I would love to hear from you. And I hope you have a good rest of the day. And I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye. Say, this is Mr. Carter.
This is Mr. Carter.
And you're listening to?
Listen to?
My mom.
My mom.
On She Persisted.
just from, uh-oh.